Good morning. May it please the court. This case comes before you on the granting of a motion for summary judgment on behalf of the defendant employer Walgreens based upon counts for both Title VII and Section 1991 for a failure to promote a young African male at Walgreens in October of 2003. Like most employment litigation that comes before you, this case is evidence-driven. And the district court saw fit to exclude or disparage much of that evidence on behalf of the plaintiff.
There's a class action, isn't there, by the Walgreens employees?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what, is your client an opt-out or what?
My client is an opt-out, if that's the proper expression, Your Honor.
Wait a second. You're supposed to know about that, mm-hmm. right? Is this person part of the class action?
He's not part of the class mm-hmm. action.
So
would the record show at some point, mm-hmm. in the class action, that he received notice and an opportunity to opt out, and that's what he did?
Mr. Simple was represented by prior counsel when the complaint was filed. To tell you that I have a clear understanding of his opt-out status in the class action would be a misrepresentation, because I do not, but he has never been a party to the class action litigation.
So, because that's really critical, because that case settled for $24 million.
I understand that, Your Honor.
Walgreens settled without admitting liability, so if he's in that class, he's in a very good position.
He is not in that class, and he is not participating in the class action litigation.
So he hasn't received any money from it?
Hasn't received any money, does not receive notice of the activities in the class action, and is not a participant.
Okay, thanks.
Two major portions of evidence were excluded by the district court in the direct case. Within a week of the announcement of the Pontiac job in October of 2003, Mr. Simple inquired of his own store manager, Leanne Turley, why he was not given notice of or the option to take, or why he was not picked for the Pontiac job. Leanne Turley told him, among other things, Pontiac is possibly not ready for a black manager. This was excluded by the district court under this court's decision, at least citing this court's decision in Roscoeyac, which, in a long line of cases, although it excluded the inferior's remark in that case, has held that the remarks of discriminatory conduct of an inferior person, which are made known to the final decision maker within a proximal time frame of the job action, are admissible as direct evidence of discrimination.
Well, I think when you say excluded, you don't necessarily mean not admitted into evidence. I think the district court looked at the Turley comments and didn't see that they were pertinent. This is, I believe, my understanding of what the district court said. I understand you're challenging it, but I think the district court was saying that the link between the Turley comments and the decision of Mr. Palmer wasn't demonstrated enough, and you're saying, well, yes, it was. You know, Palmer has other kinds of testimony. But I don't think it's like he said, this is hearsay, I'm not looking at it, or anything like that.
Well, Mr. Palmer, of course, had indicated in interrogatory answer number 11 that he used the input of Ms. Turley in making the Pontiac job selection.
Right.
Ms. Turley had been the manager for both. Melissa Johnlin, the person picked, and Eric Simple, the person who was not picked. One has to inquire, Your Honor, as to how Ms. Turley would have this knowledge within a week of the job selection process if she did not have the input, as Mr. Palmer says, and did not have the knowledge from Mr. Palmer that race, in fact, was a basic factor in determining the Pontiac position. Because, of course, as you know from the demographic data compiled by Walgreens, they only identified their stores in the Illinois North region in two ways: income status and race vis-a-vis white versus African-American customer base. Of the stores that had previously been offered to Mr. Simple, three of which, all of those were at the bottom three of the 28 stores in the Illinois North region as to both income level and number of African-American customer bases.
So your bottom line is that there are genuine issues of fact, I guess, number one, about how much influence Turley had on Palmer's decision, and number two, about the, if you will, the real reason for the Walgreens corporate decision not to offer him this Pontiac management position.
That's correct.
When all is said and done, that's what you're saying, because of the Turley comments about the what I sort of think of in this area is the heckler's veto equivalent in racial areas. Well, you know, Pontiac's not ready for an African-American manager, which, of course, is impermissible under Title VII.
And then Hurley also makes, Turley makes this statement that Palmer, because Palmer denied this, didn't he? When Turley said that he said that Palmer would never admit to taking race into consideration because he doesn't talk to assistants the way he talks to store managers. Was that also part of her testimony?
I think that, yes, it was part of his testimony, but the point is he did take the input of Leanne Turley into consideration, and he only took the consideration of one other person, Your Honor, Mr. Kelly.
No, but in that context of Turley's statement, wasn't she trying to say that he might admit to a store manager he takes race into account, but not to someone in, obviously, in the plaintiff position?
That may
position.
Be correct, but, of course, Ms. Turley is a store manager, and that's who he's making, presumably making the statement to. In reviewing the appellant's brief, Your Honor, it occurs to me that we did not spend enough detail in enumerating how the district court handled the demographic evidence. Because on page 18 of its opinion, the district court stated, while Palmer admitted to knowing that this report existed, he denied relying on it and making promotional decisions. And it seems to me that this statement represents the exact opposite of what this court has said on numerous occasions as to whether the district court should use a credibility determination on a statement of a witness to exclude evidence. Because that's exactly what he did with Mr. Palmer. He believed Mr. Palmer, therefore Mr. Palmer says he did not use that demographic information into making his decision on the Pontiac job, and therefore the court's going to grant summary judgment.
So again, your argument has to be this is a contested issue of fact. Palmer says he wasn't paying any attention to the report. Your statistics indicate that Walgreens, in fact, did rely on this kind of match.
Exactly correct, Your Honor. And the indirect case is as strong or stronger than the direct case. And again, Mr. Palmer supplies that information for you. I believe it's interrogatory answer number 5.
Why do people distinguish between direct and indirect?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Why do they distinguish between direct and indirect, right?
Well, I think that the court has distinguished between a direct case of discrimination versus...
But look, there are two ways of establishing... But, of course, they're often, you know, if you've got evidence for both, why not just treat it as one, as a stronger prima facie case, because you have, you know, you have the person replaced by a white, but you also have these statements by Turley.
Well, we do want to treat it as both, Your Honor, but of course, with the indirect case, McDonnell Douglas.
You divide it in two, right? You weaken it. You can have two alternatives. Each may fall short, but if you put them together, they might be strong.
I didn't intend to do that, and if my brief is an indication of that.
That's the way everybody argues these things, because it's.
There are plenty of cases that do that, although it may be reasonable for you to argue for a change.
Look, well, and then one of your other big factors that you're relying on is Palmer's experience, because he was more experienced. Simple's experience.
It's one of the factors, Your Honor.
He had the degree. He had more experience as a supervisor than she had.
It's one of the factors, but really the most difficult evidence for the defendant to respond to in this case is that in the 2 years prior to picking the Pontiac job, there were three jobs that were Mr. Simple was offered. And Mr. Palmer identifies approximately 8 other individuals that he considered for those 3 jobs, and Melissa Johnlin is not one of them. That's interrogatory answer number 5. One has to inquire as to what happened in October of 2003 to make Melissa Johnlin qualified and most competent for the selection of the Pontiac job when Mr. Palmer had not considered her for the 3 prior jobs between 2001 and 2003.
You mentioned Palmer's admission. You say he admitted that he consulted Turley. I don't think that amounts to much. But do you treat Turley's statements as admissions?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is she at a level where she can make admissions on behalf of, you know, the her employer?
She is. She's the store manager for both John Lund and Simple. She does evaluations.
The admissions, it seems to me the strongest part of your case is if what Turley said represents her explaining the policy of the company or the policy of the region, you know, or Palmer's policy. That's the most powerful. So does she know enough? Is she at a level where if she admits that the company's policy is to steer the black managers to the black stores or, you know, black neighborhood stores, that would be an admission under the rules of evidence?
Absolutely. I think she's been a store manager at that point for 8 years, and she is the one giving the input to the final decision.
Your input thing, I mean, that's not your strong point. Not the input. Your strong point, I think, is if she's in a position to testify to what the company's or the region's policy is, right? If she should know what the people above her, Palmer or what have you, what policy he uses in designating store managers, well, that's very powerful. That would be an admission of the defendant. But I don't think you've thought about that way of looking at things.
Not as much as you have, Your Honor, and I think the record could be further developed in that regard, and has not been because summary judgment was granted. But I think that's a clear statement of Ms. Turley's position. My time is up.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Williamson. So, Mr. Smith?
Thank you. May it please the Court, distinguished guests. Answering that last point of Judge Posner's, there is no evidence in this record, and certainly the plaintiff has had an ample opportunity to develop the record, that Ms. Turley participated in any decision-making as far as selection.
As a store manager, wouldn't she know the company's or the region's policy about black and white managers?
No.
Why wouldn't she know that?
There were 28 managers in this district, and some of them had been there a few years, some had been there many years. Mr. Palmer,
how long has Ms. Turley been around?
Ms. Turley's been there, I think, maybe half a dozen years. I don't know the specific
half time. A dozen as a manager or?
As a store manager, yes.
Well, was she an assistant manager before?
I assume she was an assistant manager before she became. Nearly all managers at Walgreens are assistant managers or executive assistants before they became managers.
Mr. Williamson thought it was 8 years. I assume it's there in the record somewhere.
Yes.
So it could be as long as eight.
Could be as long as eight, Your Honor.
So isn't that long enough that she would know what the criteria were for store managers?
No more than anybody outside the organization would know, because she did not, and there's nothing in the record to indicate that she ever participated in any store manager's decisions. Those were done entirely by Mr. Palmer.
I can't believe you mean that some customer coming in to pick up a prescription is going to know as much about Walgreens policies on store management as somebody who's been inside the company with only 27 colleagues in the region?
Well, what I say, I mean, someone who would probably have knowledge of the facts. Now, Ms. Turley, when filling this store manager's position in Pontiac, and she knows her own store. Ms. Turley is in Bloomington. She knows what goes on in that store. She doesn't have knowledge of what the requirements are, what would be needed to fill another store manager's position.
Why not? Because she says, and it said that she communicates with the people one notch above her, Mr. Palmer, and he solicits her input, and she, you know, presumably has done that with this pool of executive assistant managers who would be the logical ones to promote.
The extent of Ms. Turley, or for that matter, any store manager in the district, input is simply going to be, you know, how is this person performing?
It looks like a question of fact to me. It looks like, you know, Mr. Palmer says, you know, I've shut my eyes and ears to all input from everybody, but then actually doesn't say that. He says in his deposition that he solicits Ms. Turley's advice, and Ms. Turley seems to indicate that there are even racially based discussions.
Well, those are her comments are after the fact. There is no evidence that she participated with Mr. Palmer in deciding who would be the best person to fill that position at Pontiac. I think the context of her comments to Mr. Semple were she had an employee who obviously wanted the job there, the store manager's job at Pontiac, who felt badly about it, and she was trying to make him feel better. She made a comment.
That's one interpretation, of course. The other is she's telling him what she knows.
And so don't we have a question of fact?
I would submit there's no question of fact because there is no connection between her off-the-cuff comment about what she thinks.
Off-the-cuff? Well, what does off-the-cuff mean?
Off-the-cuff means she doesn't...
You tell a jury, right? You say she's just off the... She didn't know what she's talking about.
Especially when... Why would she make a racist off-the-cuff comment? Like Pontiac was... That Pontiac wasn't ready for a black manager, that a black man would fail in the store, and that that race affected Palmer's decision not to promote Semple. I mean, an off-the-cuff, I can understand, you know, you think somebody feels badly, but certainly these are very loaded words.
I think she was repeating some racist thoughts. I mean, she was trying to explain to him how maybe in the long...
Just look at where she says, I may have stated that Pontiac was possibly not ready to have a black manager. Well, you can maybe able to explain that away, but it sounds like an admission, you know, by someone who should know, right?
By someone who, in the course of her job, is offering advice to the decision maker about who to promote. You have to take inferences in favor of the party opposing a motion for summary judgment. It's not a trial on the papers.
But the advice that she is offering is not advice on who's the best candidate for the Pontiac job or any other manager's job that comes open in the district.
I think what Judge would say, if she says that she may have said that Pontiac was possibly not ready to have a black manager, isn't it quite likely that she would have said that to Palmer?
No, I don't think she...
Palmer did consult her about this.
He consulted her at some point on the qualifications of the people. I mean, we're not saying
How do we know that? I mean, in the conversation, you're assuming the conversation was somehow limited to who had a college degree or whatever, although Mr. Semple comes out very well in that comparison, too.
Well, on that point, I would say their qualifications are close, and I don't think you can infer a discriminatory motive just based on the relative qualifications.
Yeah, but that's not how I was using it. You're assuming that the conversation doesn't go on to, you know, who's best suited for this job.
The plaintiff
she's saying he's not because he's African-American.
I think her comments were that she viewed Pontiac and some other towns in the district as perhaps being racist towns. That was her own view of things that she testified in her deposition. It's not the Walgreens view. She has not been told, she's not had any conversations with...
Well, it becomes Walgreens view if Mr. Palmer takes that advice, acts on it, and doesn't promote Mr. Semple for that reason,
for an
impermissible reason.
There is nothing in the record to indicate that Mr. Palmer took that view.
We do know he didn't promote Mr. Semple. That's one step on the path.
Well, he was offered, I think, a total of at least three.
He's offered the African-American stores.
With the high shrinkage rate. I mean, he specifically said he wasn't interested in those locations. And then the other thing is, you know, you take issue with whether or not, you know, he had a degree. But he did have a degree, and it was beyond that. He had significantly more experience than she had.
He had approximately 4 years, 4.5 years experience. She had about 2.5 years experience.
Exactly. So that's 2 years. You don't think that counts for anything?
Well, the average term of somebody serving as an executive assistant was about 2 years. In fact, Mr. Semple, before they got promoted, if they were qualified, Mr. Semple started getting offers after he had been in EXA about 2 years. So the experience level, I would suggest, is really not as critical as you might think at first glance. Now, the demographics of this particular district are, and as the court is aware, most managers are going to start out in a low-profit store simply because the company doesn't want to take a chance on them failing to build up their skills. And in this district, the Illinois North District, most of those low or several of those low income, low profit stores are going to be in the African American community.
So was she offered a low income store in the African American community first?
No, she was not.
So then that defeats that argument you're making. So she should have been offered that. If it's supposed to be a training ground, a low-income store where you cut your teeth and you learn the ins and outs of the business, then why wasn't she? She wasn't offered one of those, was she?
Well, it was not a low-income African-American store. Pontiac was one that I would say was in the lower half in terms of income, but it was not.
It was in the lower half, but it wasn't in that lowest end, which you just said. That was a sort of a training ground for a new manager, and she was not offered such a store.
No, she was not.
Okay.
But the
and he was offered three.
He was off. Well, the Kankakee store would probably be considered that. The store in Peoria actually later merged with another store, so I don't know that that was the dead end that Mr. Simple contended it was, because the manager of that went on to a larger store pretty quickly. When it merged, but the fact is that Pontiac store, before it had before the opening came up there, there was a Vietnamese manager. Actually, the first store, which would negate this idea that only whites would be appointed as manager of that store. So. There was evidence, and in fact, the other African American or the African American store.
All the minorities together, right? That's making sense.
Well, if the allegation or the theory is that Pontiac was a racist town, that it could not have someone other than a white store manager.
Well, there is racism, and there's racism, right? So.
Your Honor.
Is there anything in the record about different buying patterns of black and white customers of Walgreens?
Well, as far as the demographic information, now Mr. Simple has contended that, well, this is somehow evidence of a racist motivation by
Walgreens. How are you answering my question? I asked you a very simple question.
As far as, no, that was never, is
there,
never developed.
The answer is no.
No.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Mr. Williamson, does he have any time? No, your time has expired. Your time has expired, Mr. Williamson.
Thank you, Your Honor.